As far as the presence of God, as far as the move of God, as far as building a building and meeting people and driving in an old Chevy 54 with a diesel engine and a truck front end, whatever it is, it was big, right? Anyway, we had a good time. So, but before we do anything, somebody said that Judy gave a word of testimony a few weeks ago. I wasn't here, so I asked her, I said, can you repeat it for those who never heard it? So, there you go. She was pretty free this morning, eh?
Yeah,
everybody saw that. That's good.
I just feel like the healing rain. Like we're just covered by that healing rain from God, and we have to grasp it and know that it's come. Grasp that healing rain. I don't know if I can do the testimony the same as last time, because I just really let the Spirit of God. I guess the most important thing is God's good with his promises. You got to grasp onto the promises of God and hold on to them and get them right in there. And I was healed. I was healed from May. Something was found in me. And God carried me through the time and the journey where I found out in October, November, that what was inside me had disappeared. Gone. But there's lots of little in stories in there where people were praying for me and supported me. And I had to do things, too, that out of my life that God brought back that I had to make right with people. And he brought that right in forefront. And right up until the 11th hour, I held on. And I don't really want to do that, God, but I did. I was healed. Now God's telling me, because things are coming against me, right? And Satan's always going to try to steal that healing from you, that stand in the promise. God just doesn't heal a little bit. He heals whole.
Amen.
Okay? He heals whole. And remember that. And Satan's going to try to steal that away. And don't let that happen. Stand in that healing rain. That's it.
Amen. You got to rejoice in it every day, right? Awesome, thank you. And we want to thank the people that prayed for us. Many people were praying for us when we went over there. We don't know usually what we encounter. But people in this church, I know they were praying. And the people who donated stuff and money and all of that was made possible. You know, was brought over there and blessed someone. So they were blessed not only in things or money, but they were also blessed in receiving from God. And you know what? This is the grace of God. It's not the work of a team, of one person. You know, as the church get behind one another, like this church does, you know, supporting one another, helping one another, there's increase in the land. The church has to increase. The church has to increase, and it's happening. And we saw it firsthand over there. So before we have testimony time, do you mind if we have testimony today? Okay. Because I was trying to find the word this morning, and not this morning, all week, but we're living in a world that's moving quick. Things are changing fast. Nothing's remained the same. So we have to get in the swing of things. My wife always says that I walk slow, right? And that's true. So I got to speed up. Even me, I got to speed up, right? So if the pastor has to speed up, some of you guys, we have to speed up too, right? We got to get with it because, you know, there's going to be more Muslim family coming to Trenton because of the new church, right? So we really lift up Jesus. We can't do anything, say, oh, well, you know. No, we got to lift up Jesus wherever we are. So that, because there is a difference when you know Jesus and you have a relationship with him. You know, it does something. It just changes your life. You have a hope. You have a vision. You're different. No, not that you're better than anybody, but someone great lives in you, and that's awesome. So this morning, we do have a video that we kind of put on this morning. We did it last night, yesterday afternoon. So, yes. So there's two churches that we work with. One is about 20 kilometers or 20 miles away, and one is about 3 kilometers. Both pastors were waiting for some material. So over the months, guess when he got his material? The second guy got his material on Sunday that we were there. The gravel, the cement, everything came in between the service in the morning to the service at night. Everything came in there, but the other guy had all this stuff. So we spent most of the time working with Julius. Okay, so who's first? Who want to testify this morning? Let me see. We'll go one at a time. You want to hear them? Gloria, where's Gloria? Come on, Gloria. First time. Gloria did awesome. She got there a day ahead. When we got there, she knew everything. She knew how many steps there was to go to your room, right?
Yes, I counted. By the time I decided to go, it was like 3 weeks before the trip, so the plane was full. And I was told I'd have to go by myself the day before, and I thought, oh, I can't do that. I've never flown by myself. I've never gone to anybody, one of these countries at all. I can't do that. But the Lord just reassured me. Actually, a girl at work told me, what's your problem? Why wouldn't you go? And what would you be doing when you go? And I said, well, we'd be helping, giving out clothes and doing things, and the men will be helping to build. And she said, well, I'm 120% sure you should go. So with her encouragement, I booked my ticket and went too. So yes, I got there about noon the day before everybody else arrived at, but you guys didn't get until bedtime the second night. So I had like a day and a half there by myself first. But the Lord blessed me with a beautiful trip down. He sent me in the plane beside a really nice elderly Greek couple from Belleville, who are Christians. And when I got there, the second day, I met this very interesting lady who you saw on the video. She was right in the front there. Her name's Toni, and if you think of her, you can pray for her. She's a spiritualist, and so we had some interesting conversation. She tried to keep it away from the spiritual stuff, but she was an enjoyable company, very interesting lady. And I've emailed her since, and I've asked her, you know, who is your higher power? Because there's so many spirits in the world, but there's only one that truly is the ultimate power, who loves everybody and so passionately. Anyway, she's going to send me her testimony about how she became a spiritualist healer. And we're praying for her because she's the head healer in her spiritualist church and in Barrie. So she's a very interesting lady. So God puts people across our paths that we never really expect to meet. I was so impressed with the whole trip. Like, it's a beautiful, beautiful place to be. There are a lot of steps and a lot of walking. And I felt like a 20 years older than I am doing all those stairs and walking, but I came back a couple pounds lighter. I'm surprised. We had so many wonderful meals. I was really impressed with the people. The Spirit of God is there in the congregations, and that they prayed for us when we left. And I was thinking of Philippians 4. I read that the one night. About how Paul talked about, you know, how it's not the stuff that I'm looking for, really. It's, you know, I want to see you blessed by your giving. And that was the heart that I felt was there. They want to see us blessed by our giving, and they were so thankful that we came. And it's such an encouragement if you can, you know, just how we feel when guests come to visit the church here, and how you feel more open, and how they must feel to have the church from Canada come down with 7 people. The men, oh my goodness, Elmer and Owen and Brian and Pastor John, like working in the heat every day. We were just astonished at what they could do. And how blessed the people have been by knowing that here in Canada we care about them, we pray about them, we give, and actually not just give stuff, but came and gave self. So I was really blessed, and I'm going to get my ticket for next year.
Awesome. Yeah, you did a good job. And one night I was going to, a Sunday night, you see, sometimes you prepare something and God changed the whole thing. So I said, okay, I'm going to get Tracy and I'm going to get Gloria to prophesy tonight. right? And then everything changed. You know, you make your plans, but God changed everything, and the spirit of healing came in the room. I've never seen that before, that strong. But anyway, who else? Tracy, where are you? Tracy, come on. Tracy, she was awesome, right?
It was so exciting, and when we started that, of course, people who know me, I got all emotional just watching it. It was an amazing time, but you know what? I was really pleasantly surprised, because people told me you're going to cry, it's whatever. We went to Pastor Joachim's house first, and it was like Little House on the Prairie. It was adorable. They had everything they needed. She swept her dirt in front of her little house. She had everything she needed. They were content with what they had. And I was pleasantly surprised. It reminded me of my grandparents' cottage. We had an outhouse. We had, you know, very rustic, and that's what it was. But they're beautiful, beautiful people. And that's what I really felt when I got home. Of course, I'm nervous, and he told us we had to share. So I was praying about it, and my heart was really that the women, I found both pastors' wives very meek and shy, and we kind of had to go and speak with them. They didn't come forward to us. And that those women, being pastors' wives, and the one shared with Pastor Sharon, that it's hard to be a pastor's wife. And that we from here, really need to go there and help them with programs, like for marriage, the dentist and the doctor. That doctor is married to a dentist, and that was the house we went to. And she shared with us that she would like programs for marriages. Pastor Joachim, probably before he was saved, but this was his third marriage. Like, their marriages are not strong. They need to be strong spiritually in their marriages. And that's something that the women, we could really work on doing in the future. I'm sorry, I'm so nervous. And I shouldn't be, because God is in control. But it was an awesome trip, and it was really hard. It was like you wanted to stay, and you wanted to go home, and I didn't really like a lot of the food, and the food didn't really like me, but you know what? We had such an awesome time, and when you brought that up, it was like, I'm all emotional. I want to get on a plane and go back there, and Brian can tell you that. He wanted us to leave him there, so it was awesome. Yeah, he's my adopted son now, too. So we grew closer as a group, too, like, you know, sharing this. So it's awesome. You have to go. It's amazing.
How about you, Brian? Come on. Yeah, I think Brian was pretty shook up, right?
It was such a blessing to be there. You got to see what the people are like, how they live, and you realize how much up here we have so much, and we take it all for granted. Down there, they have so little, and they're so thankful. They're grateful for us coming down there, and they show their appreciation with their cooking, and the hospitality was great. The food for me was great. I enjoyed all of it. They cooked us special meals at lunchtime during each day, which they don't usually cook special meals every day. They get rice and beans. They don't get too much else. And the fruit was really good, too. The mangoes, the guava, this stuff was just great. And I was very moved by the whole trip. There was a big move of the Holy Spirit, the churches. You could feel the people when they were getting prayed for. You could see them being very hungry for God and for their healing. And there was a lady who was prayed for her father, I think. He had something wrong with his chest, and he took a cloth home that was anointed during the prayer, and she was sitting there the next morning and waiting for us at 8 o'clock in the morning or something to tell us that he was healed. And it was just such a blessing. I can't wait to go next year either. Maybe a little longer. God bless you.
You didn't tell him that I saved your life.
Okay. I woke up in the morning one morning, I don't know, 7, banging, and I'm like, there was a spider probably the size of, I don't know, It was big. It was big. Bigger than the ones you see here, anyway. Like a furry and like a looked like a tarantula, but it's not a tarantula. And they said, if it bites you, it just paralyzes you a little bit. And it's not poison. Yeah, it'll go away. It's not a poisonous thing, but it hurts. Pinchy, they said. What else?
It was heading right for your bed.
Yeah, it was heading for me. I was sleeping. So we got rid of it, and then we put towels by the door so he couldn't come in the next night. Another one, because they were in the hall. They had gardens in the hall. So they would come out of the plant, but it wasn't really that bad. I stopped and got a picture of one of them, so it couldn't have been too bad.
Okay, Brian, thank you. You did awesome. Elmer, you're here. I was talking to Elmer. I said, when you see something, you see it at a different angle, and some different things hit you more than others. What hit you, Elmer?
The fishing story.
Fishing story?
Yeah, your spider.
My spider?
It was really only this big.
We got a picture of it.
Anyways, set the record straight. Owen does snore. And when he sneezes, it's like an explosion.
I said you were a good monkey.
you got your kick at it here in a minute. There's a few things stuck with me. One was at the resort. People knew what we were doing. It's like if you go to work in a prison. By the time you get there, everybody at the prison knows what you're doing because that's what they do. And I know the one day I wasn't there, Raphael, our interpreter, came back and Owen wanted to buy him lunch. And it was a bit of an ordeal to get him in to the dining room. They wanted money for it, and they gave him an hour. And because the Cubans aren't allowed on the resort. The last couple of days, I noticed things. I noticed when the taxi and the interpreter came by, twice a girl ran out with a drink for the taxi driver and for Raphael, like a soft drink with ice. So they knew what was going on, and they respected it, and they came out. Another thing that really stuck with me was at the evening church service, we were, after the sermon, which was good, Jeff, by the way. Very well presented. I noticed an old man in the back, and when the people were coming up for prayer, he prayed without stopping for probably 3/4 of an hour. That's what he did. The next day we went to the church that was further away, and that morning the woman came back to say that her dad was without pain and he was healed. That wasn't a small trip. She came from Santiago de Cuba, which would have been probably an hour on a cattle truck. And she came back just for that. She said her piece, and she got back on the cattle truck and went back to wherever she came from. So it was a big deal for her to get there. It wasn't a small thing. We worked for 2 days at that resort, and both Owen and I and Brian thought we'd like to go back to Joaquim's church, which didn't have any progress because he didn't have materials, and we sensed a bit of discouragement there, so we went back. We went back on Wednesday. Owen and I and Brian had dug a couple of holes deeper for the footings on the Friday, I believe it was, or Saturday, whatever day it was, Saturday, I guess, eh? we didn't expect any progress. When we got there, there were 10 people there. One of the guys that was there was an elderly man. He was the guy that was praying for 45 minutes. And he was wielding a crowbar and a shovel and working and doing that, which really, it struck me as that spiritually he was there, and he was there physically, both ways. And that, to me, was encouraging. We were encouraging to them because we said we'd come out. Joaquim had people come out, and that day we moved a lot of soil. Collectively, we moved a pile of soil. Like, I could have done it with a backhoe at work in maybe an hour, hour and a half. But when you figure that backhoe was 100 horsepower, we were just 15 guys or whatever we were. We moved a lot of material in that time. And that was as a result of the grace of God and encouragement from one person to another. And I think that's what we have to do, is encourage one another.
Okay, Owen, it's your turn.
The thing I think stuck with me the most, you've heard a lot of the stories, and I agree with what they're saying. None of them are exaggerated, except the spider one, maybe. But they were ugly spiders, and you had to watch it. And then you had really, really teeny little bugs that just loved the back of my legs. But other than that, you know, you got to remember where you're working, right? It's not like working out here where you might hit the odd mosquito. Down there, there's all sorts of stuff. But it wasn't all work, and it was a lot of fun. I want to talk about Sunday, but I want to add a little bit of humor that'll always stay in my mind as long as I live, I think. On the one of the pictures, you remember, beside the church, we're digging that big, long trench, and there was five guys in the trench. That doesn't generally happen. It was a really unique picture. What generally happens is there's two or three guys working in little teams. One guy will pick, and he is absolutely sweating so bad he couldn't move, so he needs to cool down. Not like our guys here. There's four guys working in the ditch here. One guy's standing on a shovel, you know, and the other one guy working. They're doing similar down there, but what you can't do it. You can't go more than 3 or 4 minutes. Well, it would kill us. Some of those guys do, but anyways, you stand there, and one guy picks, the other guy jumps in the hole, and then he'll shovel it out, and one guy will pick, and the other guy will get in there and pick some more, and then someone will shovel it all out. A bit of a cycle, right? So anyways, we were working in the trench, and I wasn't in that picture. I was at the end of it looking. I thought, wow, this is kind of cool, and Brian took the picture, and all of a sudden, this herd of goats, 5 or 6 goats went walking by. And the stupid things, I says, this stupid thing doesn't realize the wire is there. There's a wire to keep things level, right? And he says, all of a sudden he walks right through. The wire goes stringing that way. I think, oh, no, now what are we going to do? We've got to set the whole wire level flat up again, right? So I thought, oh, like this, you kind of lose enthusiasm, right? You go, wow, now what am I going to do? So I turn around and look down the trench, and here this stupid duck is in the trench, in the wet cement, paddling like this. A duck. I'm not finished yet. And then you turn your back around this way, and there's a turkey, that turkey with the ugly neck. I couldn't figure out what a chicken and a turkey was. I figured out finally, if it's got an ugly neck, it's probably a turkey. So there's a turkey and a bunch of chickens beside it. And then you turn this way, and there's his jackass and his horse and more donkeys over there. And it's absolutely insane what you're working around. It'll stay in my mind forever, eh? But it's a lot of fun, and the people are absolutely tremendous. And where they mix their cement. You talk about this poor lady trying to keep a house and sweeping up. She's got her home over here. And where we had lunch, you saw where we had that nice lunch and where the cake was sitting, that was also the cement mixer. They move the table, and what they do is they go get a pile of gravel and a pile of sand, I guess, and they make 5 piles of it. Then they take 5 bags of concrete mix. You ever open up a bag of concrete mix? I mean, the dust goes everywhere, right? And then what they do is they take it and they turn it all over when it's dry. Then they make little holes and you start to mix it. And that's what Brian was doing. He's a cement mixer extraordinaire, that guy. Anyways, as you run down a pile, you mix it and they take it and the other guys. And you take it not in a wheelbarrow. You take it and you put it in a bucket. You grab the bucket, you walk out, give it to somebody else. They go up and they pour it in the trough. You can back it in a bucket full of cement. It's like working in 1940. But it's a lot of fun. And the most amazing thing was you get into San Diego to Cuba, you see the backhoes, although they're 1940s maybe, 1950 backhoes. I don't think much newer than that, maybe 60. Elmer could tell you better. And they have all the heavy equipment in there. But try to get that out to the country, and I don't think it's going to happen at all, ever. But what amazed me the most on Sunday, we went to the church service Sunday morning. Pastor Jacques got up and spoke, and he said, would anybody like prayer? Well, sometimes at our church, the Spirit moves, and a lot of people come to the front. Other time, a few people come to the front. And it's actually the move of the Spirit. I get that. But at this church, there wasn't a soul sitting down. Everybody went to the front. They're so hungry, right? So here's Pastor Jacques and Pastor Sharon, and the girls got up, pardon me, Gloria and Tracy. Thanks, Tracy. They got up, and I don't know, 45 minutes till we get all through the people, right? And I look at Pastor Jacques, and he's preaching and praying for people, and he's starting to get that look of, I'm getting tired. He's not going to say a thing. He's going to keep on trucking, right? But wow, I thought, wow, this is the morning. So anyways, it went on, and we finally left, and they absolutely humiliate you the way they treat you for lunch. It's horrible. It's part of the, I just don't like it. You know what I mean? Pierre embarrassed me one time many years ago and washed my feet. That was in a service we did to prove a point, and it was part of a thing. And when you sit there and eat and they give you stuff and you realize what they're giving you, they make $20 a month, right? They'll put two bottles of pop on the table for you to eat. The bottle of pop's worth $1.50. And they want you to drink it. You just feel so, wow, whatever, right? Anyways, so Sunday came, we had dinner, and we went back to the resort, got all freshened up, and went out to the second church Sunday night. The second church had a bigger congregation than the first church. That you saw it there. You saw the people at Hukim's church. They're all in it. There was that many people outside the church. So it was much the same thing. The lineup there was incredible. And I looked at it and I talked to Pastor Jacques after. He was absolutely fried. Like, I mean, fried. You could just see it on his face. It's actually a compliment to you. He just kept on trucking and praying for these people. Everybody went up and prayed for them, right? And it was pretty cool. And at the end of it, it was all over. We did some more praise and worship and watched the video a bit, and everything was great. It was dark now. It's like, I'm going to say it's 8 o'clock at night, 8:30. And you look out, and of course, oh yeah, the power went out. The power is incredible, but that's another story. So you look out as you walk out the church, and as everybody leaves the church, a nice big flat spot out front of where the congregation was, they start circling in a semicircle. The people that were outside made the outside of the horseshoe. The people that came out of the church got inside the horseshoe, and they all greeted each other. Absolutely insane. And nobody wanted to go. And you got kids running around, and there was Pastor Jacques just about ready to pass out, I think. But he kept on trucking, so... But it was great. I'd go back in a minute. There's things I would take. And if you ever go back to Cuba, think of the very simplest thing you would want to take. A hacksaw blade. We cut all that rebar, right? Took three guys to cut one piece of rebar, 10 millimeter diameter, 3/8 of an inch diameter, right? Three of us took it. Because a hacksaw blade had about 8 teeth left. So you'd only cut partway through. Then you'd roll it over. Someone would stand on a rebar. Somebody else would pull it up and break it. And then you cut the next piece. And we cut like 30 pieces of rebar that way. A plastic tarp, a simple plastic tarp at Canadian Tire. And don't buy the cheap one. If you're going to pay $8 at Canadian Tire, go buy a $30 tarp and give it to them because they'll use it forever. The tarps they have big holes in it, but they love it. The simplest thing that you can think of to live in with to make your life easier would probably work. I mean, that rebar. Oh, we bought a DeWalt electric drill, right? So Elmer had made the form up there, and Julius Caesar came up and said, we've got to drill a hole. He couldn't say it because his English is poor, but better than my Spanish. So he wanted a hole about 7/8 diameter in the bottom of the form. So Elmer said, oh, and get me a drill and put a 7/8 spade drill in it. So I go over and get it and give it to Elmer. He goes, just like it was nothing. It's nothing to us, right? They couldn't believe it. They all walked over and looked at the hole, figuring, how did that get there? Unbelievable. We gave the drill to somebody else to use. Like, here, you drill the hole. He had no idea how to use it. And then we showed him how to use it. Well, they all had a kick out of that. They all had to try it then, right? But it's very amazing, the simplest things to us. I asked, how are you going to get that hole in there if we didn't have the drill? He said, that's what he did. So they must have a spade drill on the end of a T-handle on wood, and he would have just screwed it up. He would have got it, a couple of bruised knuckles and stuff, I'm sure, but he would have got it. No, it's amazing. And also, the people in the resort, but the second day, Pastor Jacques warned me. He says, Owen, they're going to watch you. They're going to figure out what we're doing, and they're going to be watching you just to see what you're really about when you're not going to church. Are you real, or are you some kind of drunken phony, right? And it's amazing what they'll do. And the one that amazed me the most is keeping enough fresh water for us to drink when we go. You drink a ton of water, right? So you go, and we all came to the table and would put our water bottles and stuff. And they really try to want you to buy the water at the restaurant. or around the corner at some store, right? But it was a lot of money. So the girls would come up and see them on there, our waitresses, and they would automatically take them and fill them full of water and bring them back. Just, we didn't even have to ask for it after a while. They just knew what we wanted because they knew where we were going. So it was they were good people. Anyway, I could go on forever. But nonetheless, here you go, sir.
Thank you, Juan. Okay, so we have you. Anybody else? No, I forgot.
I'll be short.
Okay, you'll be short.
Yeah. I just want to say it was the best, amazing trip that we've been on since we go into Cuba. And so there was really a lot of bonding among the team, and it was awesome. But the thing that really struck me the most was this spiritualist lady that was a friend of Gloria's. And she was kind of afraid of us, but finally we asked. She came one day and spent a whole afternoon sorting clothes with us and doing that. And she said, oh, next year I'm coming back and I'm going to get all my friends. We're going to bring all kinds of clothes and help you. So that was good. But then I said, you got to come to church with us. She said, no, I can't. But she came to church. She sat in the front row. And when she came out, she said, you know, I don't know. But she said, because he had a few words of knowledge, she said, your husband is remarkable spiritually. And I thought, yes, God is greater than your God. But anyways, and then she said, you know, we don't pray. We just pray really soft. You guys are radical. So anyway, she went home with a lot to think about, and I believe God's going to move in her life, and she's going to change all the people she's ministering to. And so that really blessed my heart. And then after Gloria left, another lady attached herself to us, so we must have looked approachable or something. But anyway, and that lady received the Lord, and so it was amazing. It was a great trip.
Yes. So I was amazed because I think Owen was talking about people being healed. And the first service, I'll tell you, this is what happened. This beautiful Cuban lady, she's 26, and she's looking for a husband. She came after personally to us and said, you know, I want a godly man. Can you pray? Because I'm just visiting here today. She said, and I want you to pray for me so that I find a godly man, right? A born-again man. And 2 days later, she had one. Isn't that true? She connected with a guy over there, an awesome guy, and he had an eye for her. And anyway, they start talking, and prayer answer. All right, that's good, right? But that was the morning. I had a call in the morning for grief. People who had grief. Maybe somebody had died in the family or something, and they were still grieving. I mean, they just came flocking down the aisle, screaming and crying, and all. And God began to minister to them, to set them free. But that night it was awesome because we were planning something else, and then people began to come for healing. About 25 came, maybe. I didn't count. Girls were praying with a translator over here, and pain was leaving everything. And I must have prayed for 20 people, and every one of them completely healed. I mean, it's like something was flowing. It was not me, but something. I was just moving, and Brian was sitting at the front weeping and crying because he could see all those guys. One had AIDS and flew up on the altar. Another one was really a bad back, whatever, flew up in the back. And every one of them just said, thank you, no dolor, no more pain. And they all left the altar without pain or whatever, you know. So it was flowing. And I was reading, it said the scripture, it says, you know, but Jesus, aware of this, withdrew there. Many followed him. And he healed them all. And you know, I can see Jesus doing that, healing them all now, because, you know, maybe one here, one there. No, he healed them all because the Spirit was moving, you know, the Spirit of God. We don't understand, you know. And that's how you realize that, how humble you got to come. And Owen was serious when he said, I was tired. By the night time, I was so tired. He kept looking at me and said, boy, you look tired. Whoa. I can see why you didn't want to go work yesterday. No, I didn't want to go work because I knew, it seemed like when the Spirit of God moves on you and, you know, you're commanding this thing to leave, you're going this way, that way, and it was really, but awesome. God did awesome. That's why I phoned my son and I said, wow, I said, this is amazing. And you know what? If he can do it over there, he can do it over here. The only obstruction sometimes is us. Because we think too much, doctor, medicine. And I'm not saying it's bad, but over there they don't have medicine. They don't have nothing. So they can only trust God. That's, and you know, when you get to the place when you can only trust God, that's when things happen. All right. So altogether it was an awesome trip, and everybody was... The team was very good, and, you know, we ministered to people, and people ministered to us. So, okay, I could say more, but I won't right now. We're going to have communion. You ready for communion?
Amen.
Okay. So I'm going to ask the usher to bring pass the element and grab something. And while he does that, well, I just want to talk about vision a little bit. You know, Pastor Travis began to talk on guardrail, right? Last week, putting guardrail in your life. And I want to talk about putting guardrail on your vision. So while they pass the emblem, okay, 30-some years ago, somebody had a word for us and prophesied that we were going to be teaching and having a church and going to mission, taking people to mission. Well, I was thinking about that yesterday. I don't know, we might have took 70, 75 people to mission so far. That including Trinidad and Cuba. And never realized that. See, prophecy is being fulfilled in your life as you work. You know, you can't say, God, you know, fulfill your prophecy. No, you work. You do something. And first thing you realize is being fulfilled. You know what I mean? So many times we had occasion of stopping and say, but we kept going, you know. Or sometimes people said something, why are you doing this? And why? I don't know. But as far as our vision was to take people, so you can go there and see what God is doing out of your field, how the everyday, you know, like Elmer, he works 14 hours a day, right? And Owen is the same thing, but by going there, they can see the hand of God, right? So it changed their life, and I'm sure that your life has changed. Gloria's life has changed, you know, because you've seen so much. Now you appreciate what you got here. Little house, beautiful, right? Awesome. So anyway, it's hard to keep focus on the vision because you can get off so easily. But I think and I know that this church is called to build church, not house. When we go over there, the hope that we gave them, you know, like I could see the pastor's wife last year was sad. Now she's happy, she's smiling, she's totally different. So we're bringing hope to them. It's not just money or clothes or whatever it is. We're bringing hope. They give us hope. And you know, as long as we keep moving that way and setting guardrail in our lives. See, God has called us to do all different things. You know, but that thing that he called you to do, maybe you're just a helper here for now or doing something different here. Maybe helping a ministry, whatever. We had a new guy in the parking lot. How many saw him this morning?